Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a book made national headlines called Original Sin by Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson. And it also impacted the California governor's race. We don't know if Kamala Harris will end up in the governor's race. Good chance that she will. Of course, she was Joe Biden's vice president. Javier Becerra is already in the race. He was Joe Biden's Secretary of Health and Human Services. And that book makes the case that Joe Biden's mental health decline was essentially covered up by those close to him, including potentially the vice president. So Antonio Villaraigosa, who is in that race for governor and running against them potentially, made the case that what did Kamala Harris know and when did she know it? What did Javier Becerra know and when did he know it? He talked about that with us this week on The Issue Is. We also talked to him about some other issues like undocumented immigrant health care and oil industry and the fight with Governor Newsom and the Trump administration. We talked about those issues and more with our veteran political panel this week, Dan Schnur and Matt Klink. But let's start with Antonio Villaraigosa, and we sort of set that up with a clip from that now very notorious debate, the worst performance by any president in the history of debates.
The with the COVID, dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden.
Was President Biden's debate performance just one bad night, or was it something that was often seen behind the scenes at the White House? The new book, Original Sin, by Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, argues that debate was not an aberration, and there was a concerted cover-up by the Biden team to conceal his condition from the public. Biden's vice president, Kamala Harris, could be a candidate for California governor. His Secretary of Health and Human Services, Javier Becerra, is already in the race. Also in the race, Antonio Villaraigosa, who is raising questions about what his fellow Democrats knew. Antonio Villaraigosa is, of course, the former mayor of Los Angeles and former speaker of California's Assembly. He joins us now. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Alex, good to see you.
Great to see you as well. So what is your main point about Original Sin?
Well, as you said it, people have called it a cover-up, a conspiracy of people, a coterie of advisors, cabinet members, the vice president, all of whom participated, watched him every day, and saw his deteriorating health and kept it from the public. And so I've asked a simple question. What did you know? When did you know it? And why haven't you said anything? And of course, there hasn't been a response from either one of them.
Do you think that there was a cover-up?
I don't know. But in reading excerpts from that book, what's very clear, there was an intentional effort to keep it from the public that Biden's health, President Biden's health, was deteriorating over time. It wasn't just the debate that we all saw where we said, oh my God, they were doing things a year and a half earlier to hide that from the public.
We know that Kamala Harris was his vice president, was with him all the time, likes to talk about the fact that she was the last person in the room before big decisions were made. I mean, if that was happening, she would have seen it, right?
That's the question. There was also excerpts in the book that Javier Becerra was confused for Secretary Mayorkas, the Homeland Secretary. And that's the simple question. I think there's an answer to that question, and I think we all want to hear about it. Because it's really not just about what happened in that book. It's about the consequences. Mm-hmm. Trump got elected. You know, a convicted felon, an election denier, a climate change denier, someone who's put tariffs that are hurting small businesses and middle-class families, who's cutting Medicaid here in California. So it's the consequences of this failure to act or say anything that we're really focused on.
So you blame Biden for the fact that Trump got elected?
Well, I blame the people around him who refuse to say something about, sir, you're not ready for another 4 years. It's clear from this book that they intentionally kept it from the public.
I mean, obviously, you're mentioning Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra, both of whom are probably your two biggest rivals. Javier Becerra, though, was not necessarily known for having the closest relationship with Joe Biden. Here's how Joe Biden introduced him when he was naming him as Secretary of Health and Human Services.
And I'm grateful to the members of my COVID team that I'd like to introduce to you now, who will lead the way. I'm really proud of this group. For Secretary of Health and Education Services, I nominate Javier Becerra.
I mean, didn't get the name of the cabinet right, or didn't get his name right, which I guess should have been a warning sign then.
Well, and if you remember, there were a lot of criticism from the White House about his performance as HHS Secretary. But that's really not what's at issue here. For me, it's the consequences of their failure to say anything. It's their participation in this charade that somehow the president was ready for another 4 years. And the consequences of that is what I'm focused on.
You know, there's a lot of Democrats that are going to watch this and say, we're really concerned about what the president now is doing. And that all this time talking about Joe Biden is distracting from what the president now is doing. They point to the fact also that this could be a risky strategy for you. I mean, Kamala Harris won California big. Joe Biden won California big. And there's 25% more Democrats in this state than Republicans. I mean, could this be a risk in bringing all of this up and maybe not the smartest strategy?
First of all, this isn't a strategy.
This isn't a political play to get your name out there and to go after your main
opponents? I love my country.
Yeah.
And we just elected a man who is a threat to our democracy, who has done everything he can to undermine our economy, a man who I don't think is fit for office, but who clearly won because we had a 100-day campaign. If we had had a longer campaign with a candidate that could articulate not just what we're against, but what we're for, we might have had a different election. So this isn't a strategy. This book, I didn't write this book, by the way. I didn't. All of the focus of the media on this book is because the revelations are damning.
Right.
And what I'm focused on is the consequences. We've elected a man who's going after this state, who wants to go into hospitals and courthouses to deport people, who is cutting Medi-Cal, who doesn't believe in climate change. We need to have an accounting. We need to know what happened. So, and we need to be clear that there were consequences for this conspiracy.
And you're suggesting in that 100-day campaign, that was Kamala Harris. That wasn't Joe Biden who was the nominee.
Right.
You're suggesting that she did not do a good job, basically, what you just said.
Well, what I'm suggesting, she might have done a better job if she had a longer period of time. We had a 100-day campaign.
Yeah.
That's the other reason why she should get in if she wants to get in. At the end of the day, we need to shine a light on all of us.
Yeah.
Guarantee you, they will shine a light on me.
Yes.
When they do, they're going to see I've been a proven problem solver. I have a record of, as Speaker of the California Assembly, balancing two budgets when I was Speaker, largest expansion of health care, sensible gun laws. I, as mayor, put our city on a sound financial track in the middle of a recession.
Yeah.
You know, number one American city in reducing carbon emissions, number five in the world, a 50% drop in violent crime. So I have a track record. Let's put the light on all of us.
Since you're raising the issue of age and cognitive ability, you're now 72. If you were inaugurated, you'd be almost 74. If you served out an entire two terms at the end of your second term, you'd be almost 82. Should voters be concerned about your age and cognitive ability?
Let's be clear about this. I'll be roughly the same age as Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
Last time I looked, Jerry was one of the best governors we've had in a very long time. I would say the best. And the fact of the matter is, I'd go into his office and he'd do pull-ups every day. Well, every morning I'm doing push-ups and I'm in the gym. I'm healthy and I'm ready. And so, you know.
You'd be roughly the same age as Joe Biden, too.
No. I'd be roughly the same age as Jerry Brown.
I mean, if you did a second term, I should say.
And you got to get elected first.
Okay.
And then you got to have one term. And,
yeah.
And I tell you, I'd rather be transformational in my first term than mediocre in two terms.
Yeah.
So, the people will decide, but so will I. And so I'll tell you what I won't do. I won't ever allow advisors or misrepresent to the public whether I'm ready for the job. I can tell you this, I'm ready for the job.
Let's talk about that job right now. The current governor of California, going back and forth with the United States Senate this week, the Senate basically voting down California's rule that in 2035 there would be a ban of the sale of new gas-powered cars. I know you have raised questions about some of what Democrats have done in terms of oil refineries in this state. Do you think that that idea that California should ban all gas-powered cars in 2035 is a good idea? Do you support that?
Well, first of all, I don't support what they did in the Senate.
Okay.
These are people who support a man who says, drill, baby, drill, who doesn't believe in climate change. I mentioned before my record, number one American city in reducing carbon emissions, number five in the world. The port is the biggest emitter of carcinogens in the region. I made it the greenest port in the world. We used the same amount. We reduced our water consumption to 1970 levels. I believe in climate action. And what I've said is, why are we closing down refineries? If we close two more down, we've closed two. We have the highest gas prices in the country, the cleanest fuel. If we close two more refineries, the estimates are our gasoline will go up to $8 a gallon.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but me and the people that I grew up with, they care about gasoline because they have cars.
Right.
Now, the 2035 mandate, what I've said about it, we built 167,000 charging stations in the first 10 years. We need 2 million more in the next 10 years to get to that 2035 mm-hmm. goal. And even if we built those 2 million, we don't have the grid for it. So let's build transmission lines. Let's have a policy of all of the above. I went to...
But does that mean get rid of the mandate then?
No. It means start building transmission
yeah.
lines. It means an all-of-the-above strategy that says, yes, we're going to focus on renewables, solar and wind, mm-hmm. which are peak load powers, not base load power. So the battery power that we need for it, we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Because today, we produce more solar than we need.
Mm-hmm.
So we give it away to Arizona in the summer and sell it for 2 cents a kilowatt in the winter. The fact is, we need solar, wind, geothermal, big hydrogen, hydro, little hydro. We need gasoline and
nuclear,
small nuclear,
mm-hmm.
and gas. One last thing about that. Norway, one of the greenest countries, believes in climate change.
Mm-hmm.
They have a leadership that's very aggressive on it. They're able to pay for their greening of Norway
mm-hmm.
by producing gas and oil.
Mm.
We can't just close down refineries and say it's okay to have $8 a gallon gas. Put it on the backs of working people. That's who the Democratic Party used to be,
mm-hmm.
a party of who stood up for working people and the middle class. We're not that party anymore. So I don't agree with what they did and how they did it,
mm-hmm.
because these are climate deniers. They believe in drill, baby, drill. I believe in a sound, all-of-the-above approach to taking on climate change. And that means don't let the perfect get in the way of the good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it with alacrity and dispatch. Let's build again. You mentioned the governor. I was his infrastructure advisor. And I said, if we don't build faster, streamline CEQA and permitting, Texas and Florida are going to draw down more infrastructure money than we do, and they are.
So he didn't listen to you?
Well, I'll just say they are.
Okay. Another big issue, healthcare for undocumented immigrants, something that the state is grappling with, went way over budget. The governor's pulling back on that program somewhat. Do you support it? Do you think we have the resources to pay for it?
Let me just say this. We just got out of a pandemic. the pandemic didn't say you're undocumented or you're documented and, you're not going to get COVID as a result. You know, we pay more in the emergency system today over the long term than if we were providing that care. So we've got to look at how we've cut costs. There's no question about it. The governor's a grown-up, and so am I. We got to look at all of the budget. But I'll tell you something. We already pay more for the undocumented through emergency care, and that's a fact. All the experts will tell you.
I mean, the argument against that is if you offer free health care to people, some say that's like a magnet for bringing more undocumented people here, and then it just keeps getting more and more
expensive. Have left because of the economy, because of the high cost of gas, because the 66% increase in the utility costs here in California in the last 6 years. They're actually going to Texas and Tennessee and Georgia in greater numbers than they're coming to California.
So it sounds like you're open to the idea of continuing that program or maybe even expanding that program, you're saying.
What I'm open to is looking at the entire budget and basing this not on ideology. I'm against providing care for the undocumented on the facts. We pay more if they don't have health care and they go to the emergency rooms. Right. And importantly, a pandemic doesn't see newspapers. Right. They don't see whether you're documented or not. Sure. We saw that last time around. It's why a majority of Californians actually do support it. But again, we're going to have to look at that budget and see, what we cut.
We want to wrap up with something called personal issues, which is our fun sort of culture game to get to know what you're doing away from the politics stuff, right? What you're up to these days. So what's your favorite TV show as of late? What have you binged?
I did binge Succession.
Succession's great. Favorite book that you've read recently?
Oh, Ezra Klein's book.
Abundance.
Abundance.
There's a lot to learn from the California governor
I've
there.
I've been talking about that for years.
Yes, you have. A favorite movie you've seen recently?
Favorite movie? That one you got me stumped.
Okay. Maybe you got Mission Impossible this weekend if you want to check it out. And what is the best way to relax on the campaign trail for you?
Is to get plenty of sleep, which I don't usually get. but I notice when I get more sleep, I'm rested and I'm ready.
Yeah. Well, you've got about as much energy as anybody I've ever seen in terms of politics.
Which is why that age
I can only imagine you with more sleep.
Which is why that question was irrelevant.
All right. Mayor Villaraigosa, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Our thanks to Antonio Villaraigosa. Now to our political panel here to talk about what Villaraigosa just said.
I can't believe what I've been reading and seeing in the news about the Biden cover-up. I'm wondering of the people in the cabinet sitting in meetings with President Biden, how they didn't know what was going on. We all saw it in the debate. This is a massive problem that directly led to a second Donald Trump term, and as a result, all Californians are paying the price. Now Harris and Becerra are talking about leading the state of California as a possible candidate for governor. But California voters deserve to know. What did you know? When did you know it? And why didn't you speak up? Today, I'm calling on Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra to make themselves available to the press and voters, because there's a lot of questions that need to be answered.
That is Democratic candidate for California governor Antonio Villaraigosa tagging Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra for their connections to Biden as this new book, Original Sin, comes out and everybody's talking about it. Let's talk about that and more with our panel. Our returning champion is Dan Schnur, longtime political strategist, former candidate for California Secretary of State. Dan teaches politics and media at UC Berkeley, Pepperdine, and at USC, where he once taught
me. And here for the first time is Matt Klink, owner and founder of Klink Campaigns. Matt has been in the campaign business for about 20 years, largely working on Republican campaigns. Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. And Dan has literally been here since week one, since our first ever show. So it's nice to have both of you. So Matt, we'll start with you. You just saw Antonio Villaraigosa here. You saw him going after Kamala Harris. What did you make of what he's doing?
I think it's really smart on his part. Look, we're a long way off from even a June 2026 primary. He's making news right now. I mean, there's an article that's going to come out in the LA Times that talks about how he wants to pick a fight with Kamala Harris. If you want to be the top dog, you can't ignore the person with the highest name recognition, which is Kamala Harris right now. He's got to draw her either in or out of the governor's race, and it's a great way for him to do it.
And he's got Javier Becerra as like a secondary supporting cast member, which he needs to fight for the Latino vote anyways. Yeah. Your thoughts on it?
I agree with Matt on this, Alex. What this reminds me of is that in a field of candidates, so it's 8, 10, 12 candidates who are running for governor right now, with the exception of Harris, of course, Antonio Villaraigosa is the only person in this race who's run in a competitive campaign before. Mm. All the rest of them have had pretty straightforward, almost easy races. He knows how to compete.
And Katie Porter?
If you want to call that competitive, you're probably giving it more credit than it.
When she ran for Congress, I mean, that was like a almost 50-50 race.
But even so, primary in a in a congressional district,
yeah.
He's been involved at a level of politics that no one in the race other than Harris has, and this strategic decision is that the kind of thing that a veteran politician is going to make.
Yeah. Is there a risk though, because this state is so Democratic?
There is a risk, and I think you made a good point a moment ago. He was very, very smart to include Becerra in his charges. If he just talks about Kamala Harris, then it's him picking on her. Mm-hmm. By making it about both of them, as you said, not only is he competing with Becerra for the Latino and Latina vote, but it also makes it less personal, less mano a mano. And that offers him a little bit of protection.
Well, and it's a lose-lose for Becerra, too, because either says, I had no clue, okay, so you're out of the loop. Mm-hmm. Or, well, of course I know, but I didn't say anything, bad or worse.
Right.
But, and I know you want to go on to other things, but I think this is an important distinction. It's already been reported that Biden's White House staff, his palace guard, didn't even expose him all that much to the cabinet. Mm-hmm. So Becerra has some deniability. And to be honest, let's agree that most normal voters don't know what a Secretary of Health and Human Services is anyway. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who the vice president is. Mm-hmm. And they know that with the exception of Joe Biden's doctor and his wife, no one should know more about his health than his vice president. Mm. This is a very, very difficult problem for Kamala Harris. It's not going away.
You think it actually hurts her, though, in running for governor of California? You think this is something that California, largely Democratic electorate, cares about?
I do, because if you look at the field of Democratic candidates, it's not going to be easy for the average voter to differentiate between their policy positions. Mm-hmm. But Harris represents now something that they don't like about politics, the idea that something important about the health of the president of the United States was kept from them. And that's a much easier distinction for Villaraigosa and other candidates to draw.
Yeah. And as that book points out, Original Sin, she's not like a bull either. I mean, say what you want about Antonio. You like him. He is an interesting person. He likes people. That's not Kamala Harris. She's cold and kind of...
Well, that's not... I don't know if that's always true. I mean, I've had a lot of positive personal interactions with her where she's a nice, likable person, but she is not as transparent or media-friendly as Antonio Villaraigosa is, and it's interesting that she hasn't done a single interview with anybody since she lost the presidency, and when she does, she's probably going to have to answer some of these questions. But this book, which is getting all sorts of attention around the country, and Alex Thompson, one of the authors, is going to be with us next week here on The Issue Is, raises real questions about President Biden. Does that matter for the Democratic Party brand? Does that matter for people running for president next time, including potentially the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who really bear-hugged Joe Biden in a big way during his run? Does it matter?
It absolutely matters. And I think the party can't expect to move on with a forward-looking agenda until they grapple with the fact that, you know, the consensus that the orange man was bad consumed everything in the Democratic Party, so much to the point that not only, by the way, did the Politburo that they talk about, who are the close handlers of Biden,
Biden's
book,
advisors.
However, the mainstream news media, they hated Trump so much that they were going to allow someone who was mentally not there to run for president again in 2024 until that debate in June came out and everybody said, wait a second.
Well, and I think there were people that were afraid of getting their access cut off and also being mocked by their colleagues. And one of the folks who actually didn't do that was Alex Thompson, one of the authors of this book.
Correct.
And he got a whole lot of pushback from the folks and the Biden White House who said a lot of stuff about him. Jake Tapper kind of had an opposite approach. It's interesting that they're writing this book together. Your thoughts on the political impact of all of this?
So for the last decade, every Republican politician in the country has been defined in what they think and what they say about Donald Trump. Now it's the Democrats' turn, because every Democratic politician at every level of politics is going to be asked, what about Joe Biden? And the closer you get to Biden, the less deniability you have. A Democrat running for state legislature in the Central Valley doesn't have much to answer.
What about
for
Newsom, who obviously was one of his biggest surrogates?
See, Newsom's greatest friend right now is the calendar. This is a huge issue now. It will be a relevant issue, especially for Harris and to some degree for Becerra next year. But by 2028, it's difficult to see any Democrat who didn't work very closely with Biden having to answer the difficult questions.
So it's interesting to see all of these Republicans who are now blasting Democrats for the way that they didn't criticize Joe Biden in real time, who are now not criticizing Donald Trump in real time about anything. I mean, it is hard to imagine that if Joe Biden or Barack Obama accepted a plane from an Arab country, that Republicans would not say anything about that, right? That'd be a huge, huge issue. Do you think that there's some of this happening on your side too?
Alex, you mean there's gambling in Casablanca? Of course, politics is hypocrisy. Of course. The Republicans defended Donald Trump, and they're going to overlook the acceptance of a massive, what is it, a 787
plane. You think that's a bad thing?
I think it's a horrible thing.
Okay.
They can make it safe. I don't believe all the security stuff. That's irrelevant. Accepting somebody is going to want something for it.
Yeah.
And you don't just give someone a plane and say, cool, keep it, it's yours.
Yeah.
The Qataris are going to want something for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a huge base in their country right now. They're involved in every negotiation in the Middle East. They probably are going to say, hey, remember that plane we hooked you up with? We want to make sure that this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Trump should know better. But again, Trump is Trump.
Yeah. And do Republicans look like hypocrites with all this, too? I mean, they're not exactly going out of their way to show their independence from Donald Trump.
This is why Americans hate politics. They know that Republicans, to Matt's point, are being hypocritical in excusing or minimizing Trump's behavior when they'd criticize it harshly on the other side of the aisle. And they're just as angry when they see the way Democrats are giving Biden a pass in a way that they certainly wouldn't if it were an older Republican president. Look, years ago in our class, Alex, back when you were there, and ever since then, I teach a concept called selective outrage.
Mm.
And it's the type of hypocrisy that Matt was talking about a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the other side, I'm going to condemn you with all the venom and vitriol I can.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on my side, even if you do or say the exact same thing, I'm going to find a way to excuse it. Or at least to minimize it, and that's what frustrates voters.
Which is interesting, though, that Antonio Villaraigosa is now criticizing his side to bring it full circle on this whole thing.
Mildly.
You don't think it's enough?
No.
But it creates news, and so it's a man bites dog gently story.
Yeah. Up next, the local impact of the big, beautiful bill. Stay with us.
Women, the children, the seniors.
Sure.
We're protecting Medicaid.
Alex, what I will just close with is
we are actually. If you see the final bill,
we will find places to
be
bipartisan,
be actually spending and we'll more
always,
to protect the Medicaid
I will always
program.
Look to be bipartisan in areas where we agree. There are obviously going to be areas we disagree.
Look, the more,
and we'll wait to see the final budget.
The more we see people saying no, it's not going to happen, the saltier I get, Alex.
Okay.
And we're going to get this done.
That was Republican Congressmember Young Kim and Democrat Dave Min with me earlier this week. Kim was one of the leaders pushing to expand the deduction for state and local taxes in President Trump's big, beautiful bill. She helped increase the deduction from $10,000 to $40,000 for now, but it still needs to go through the Senate. Let's talk about that and more with our panel, longtime strategist and analyst Dan Schnur and Matt Klink. Dan, this big, beautiful bill, is it beautiful politically for Republicans, or are there problems here?
Hey, this is the perfect political bill right now for both parties. Republicans get to argue that they are cutting taxes and that they are prioritizing native-born or otherwise legal status Americans over those who come here without documentation. Democrats, while they obviously are losing on the substance, see this as a huge political win also, because they can argue this is a huge tax cut for rich people while working-class Americans are being harmed. So from a pure political standpoint, both sides got their perfect talking point that's going to take them through next year's midterm elections.
Do you think, though, these prospective Medicaid cuts are problematic if you're running a Republican campaign in a close district?
If they explain the Medicaid cuts, no. If they just try to argue over the top, I mean, it's not about just cutting waste, fraud, and abuse, as Donald Trump has said. You know, and in California, no, it's a loser of an argument. But around the rest of the United States, the fact that they're going to pull able-bodied Americans off the bill who should be working or at least looking for work, that's a good thing. That was in Bill Clinton's Welfare Reform Act. You know, they have said, government estimates that there is about $530 billion worth of fraud. There has been estimates that it's as high as $1 trillion. And the last part, 1.4 million people who are illegally in this country are getting Medicaid. That needs to stop. So that's a strong message that will work in what people on the West Coast and the East Coast refer to as the flyover states. But the Republicans have to concisely make that message.
See, I know if you kept us on here long enough, Alex, I would find something to disagree with Matt about. This is a very, very problematic bill for Republicans in competitive House seats next year. The cuts to working class Americans are very difficult to explain, no matter how adroit and how concisely you do it. Matt does make a good point. The Trump and Republicans' strongest argument at this point is talking about undocumented immigrants receiving a lot of those benefits. And you saw Governor Newsom retreating from that in his latest budget proposal. But on balance, this is a terrific bill for Republicans to motivate their base. But for candidates like it, for office holders like Young Kim, who need to win swing voters too, it's a much, much bigger challenge.
Let's talk about Governor Newsom. We see him fighting with the Senate, who are trying to stop his idea that in 2035, California would ban all sales of gas-powered cars. Your thoughts on that, the politics of that, this moment?
Well, this is a very, very difficult issue for Republicans in California. Newsom is smart and savvy enough to know how well it works for him here. But nationally, I'm not sure this is as good an issue for Gavin Newsom as he thinks it is. It's worth noting that 35 Democratic House members voted with the Republican majority to overturn the California regulations. That means that there's a lot of Democrats who understand that there are working class voters out there who are concerned about climate change at one level, but in the much more immediate sense, are concerned about how much it costs to drive to and from work every day.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that like their gas-powered cars.
Well, it's complete lunacy. First of all, it's practically impossible. We don't have the infrastructure to support.
Certainly right now.
Yeah, well,
Newsom would argue with 10 years it could be different.
I highly doubt that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. Nothing happens. Nothing gets built quickly in California. And just look at the federal boondoggle that Pete Buttigieg provided over, what was it, like $8 billion for 8 charging stations or something ridiculous like that. And the fact that, you know, electric vehicles are too expensive and people don't want them because they don't have the range. If you're a gardener commuting from the Inland Empire into L.A., you can't do an electric vehicle. You don't have the charging infrastructure. You can't charge at home. And how are you going to operate if you're a gardener or something of that nature? You can't get here and there to do it. So it sounds great, but in the religion of the green that exists in the California Democratic Party, it's mantra. And if you don't believe it, you're a heathen.
Well, I could talk to you guys all day, but we're almost out of time. We got to wrap things up. I want to do a quick shout out to our friends at the Sacramento Press Club. This week, you and I were both there for a great event that they had. We've got some photos of this, of where they honored some of the great journalism done throughout the state. A shout out to our pal Ashley Zavala from KCRA, who organized the whole thing. Nick Gerda, who won the Journalist of the Year for LAist. Chris Catalago from Politico. A lot of great folks up there. And in this one-party state, journalism is especially important to shine a light on what's happening. Alexei Kossoff and others as well. So thank you for being out there. And as we head towards, we're
just part to now. Correct one thing quickly, Alex. California is a two-party state. They're just both Democratic parties.
That is true. And we see both of them running in the race for governor right now. Quickly, it's Memorial Day weekend. Your thoughts on the importance of Memorial Day weekend?
Absolutely. It is not a happy day, but it is a day to celebrate and be thankful for the men and women who over two plus centuries have given their lives in defense of freedom in this country.
So I've been an independent for many, many years, but back when I was a Republican, I had the great privilege of working for the late Senator John McCain. And he always taught me that whenever you meet a man or woman who served their country, you thank them for their service. So on Veterans Day and Memorial Day alike, and on 363 other days as well, let's thank those brave men and women for what they do for us.
A big thank you to everybody who is watching right now for your service, and we're thinking of all the men and women who died on behalf of our country as well. Thank you both for being here. I've got a final word, my commentary about what's going on right now with anti-Semitism when we come back. My commentary is about the cold-blooded murder of two Jews and the wake-up call it represents for all of us. Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram were leaving a Jewish museum in Washington, D.C. when a gunman unloaded 21 bullets into them. He was heard chanting, "Free Palestine," and later told officers, "I did it for Palestine, I did it for Gaza." That suspect had never actually met his victims, and if he did, he'd know that Sarah was actively working on peace efforts, including trying to solve water scarcity issues for the people of Gaza. There are legitimate criticisms of how the Israeli government has treated the innocent people in Gaza, but just because someone's Jewish doesn't mean they support everything Benjamin Netanyahu does. The phrase, often chanted on college campuses these days, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," is interpreted by some Palestinians to mean an end to what they call Israeli occupation. But Jews fear that phrase actually means ending Israel itself and the lives of the Jews living there. Holocaust survivors we've profiled over the years speak to us hoping to prevent a similar situation. Never again is what they say. For generations, Jews have stood up when other minority groups were senselessly attacked. At this moment, Jews can use as many allies as possible to stand with them and not allow this hateful rhetoric into the mainstream. Hate is never okay for anyone. I'm Alex Michelson. We end with an image of Yaron and Sarah and a word in Hebrew that means both hello, goodbye, and peace. Shalom.
Our thanks for listening to the show this week. We'll be back next week with more, including a conversation with Alex Thompson about his book, Original Sin. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.